everybody, and welcome to the Friday post game. I am your host, Malcolm Fleshmere. I got my new name wrong. Yeah, professionals. Welcome, new members. I'm Malcolm Fleshner. I'm the host of the Friday post game every other week, anyway. With me, as we have the trifecta, the Devil's Triangle, Steve-O, and to my left. Oh my gosh, what is this? What's going on over here? Dave Kohler's in there somewhere. Where are you, Dave?
Here I am.
Dave,
there's
a sea of boxes. All will be explained soon, I promise. But I wanted to welcome everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you're looking forward to a great weekend. It was a great power panel earlier today. The truth is, we record these on Thursdays. For new members, we're recording this on Thursday. It's not live, and so if anything happens, major news breaks Friday morning. The Mueller investigation
will this week.
Yeah, every day. So that's why we're not covering it. But I'll explain all this momentarily, but for those of you who are new members, Steve-O is a longtime TYT employee, went to high school with Cenk, same with Dave. Dave is actually like employee number one, and so they've been with the company a long time. They used to be more involved in the main show back when we shot in a smaller space, and basically everybody was involved in the main show. But now, look at them switching back the cameras. You see what's happening here, Craig? tally lights, someday, dream of tally lights. So now the way we involve them, and you can get your fill of Dave and Steve, is on the Friday post game. So no Anna, no Cenk, but we have Steve and Dave and Malcolm, and we do some fun stuff. And Dave, do you want to explain why you're standing in the sea of boxes?
Well, if you're one of the 19 viewers of the post game show, you probably already understand. A few weeks ago, I was whining that Anna gets gifts whenever she mentions one of her hobbies, and then the TYT fans flutter with gifts. Most recently, it was woodworking. So I said, but you could do the same for me. I'm into tennis and chess. You can just get me gifts. I have fans too. And nobody did for several weeks. So last week in my solo postgame show, I declared that the thing is over. No one sent me gifts. It's all right. Anna, they love her more. And look what happened.
Yeah.
So this is the best metric we ever have. There are at least 14 viewers of this show.
Wow. And so
14 gifts here.
This is
proud 14.
So the spendthrift 14 because they're bothering to send you gifts. So we don't know. Dave wanted to open all the boxes beforehand because he wanted to be sure nothing untoward was going to happen. These have not been checked by any bomb sniffing dogs. So if somebody is so industrious as to watch this post game and wait for Dave to request tennis balls in the mail and then send us a mail bomb, kudos to you for the diligence.
And by the way, I hate to spoil all the fun for you, but the reason why you got all of this is because Anna said, hey, can you guys just send some shit to Dave so he stops crying?
Some
and that's what happened. That's what
every
happened.
Day we really? Come in here and Dave's just crying at his desk.
Because Dave and Anna sit kind of close to each other, so Anna can hear and see the tears streaming down Dave's face. And so Anna did a little thing on her Instagram or whatever, and this is what happened, Dave.
Yeah, sure.
I'm kidding, Dave.
So unboxing. It's the first ever Friday post game unboxing episode, and let's get to it. Let's see what we got here.
In there. This is great.
This is the easiest one. It's a cylindrical, soft, mushy.
And do you know who they're from? Or
cylindrical, soft, and mushy. What?
Hello. This could be your worst. Hey, it's tennis balls.
If you want to try to see who it's from here,
I'll work on that.
Yes. So thank you to the first tennis ball.
That came from Amazon Fulfillment Services.
Here's a box.
Thank you, Amazon.
Small box.
By the way, this is all Amazon, all of it.
Oh my God, it's a can of tennis balls.
All right, that one we have a receipt. Is it a gift receipt?
Thank you.
You can send a thank you note, Dave. I don't know if these people even would want us to say who it's from. No, it doesn't say.
But you can just say the
first name. There's a gift receipt. No, there's no name so far.
All right, the gift number three. Oh my God, it's a can of tennis balls.
Wait a minute, hang on. No, wait.
There's more.
There's more, but that's not all.
I've never seen this brand, this kind of Wilson. So whatever this is, all court. Thank you. And there's a book, Swiftly Sharpen the Fang. I don't think this came to me. Oh, it did. It came in the same box.
Yeah, it's for you.
Right. Who's it from?
Just Malcolm's first name.
Do you want me to save all the send a thank you notes?
Yeah, sure. Stuart Kenyon.
Yeah, you guys should wait at home for thank you notes from Dave, just like he was waiting for you to send packages.
Here's another book. I guess you won't know who any of these are from. Must they put a note in? Logical Chess, Move by Move. Explain. So it's a chess, annotated chess book. I have a lot of chess books, but I don't have this one, so thank you.
All right, so I have a note. The earlier book and tennis balls says, "Hi, Dave. I love you on the Friday post games. Here are some tennis balls for you and a book I thought you might like. My TYT username is Mistral Dawn, in case you're wondering why you've never seen my name in the comments. Your fan, Mistral." And she also says, "The book is by an indie author in the UK. The story is set in England, but it could easily be the US. I hope you enjoy it."
Okay, it's so
that's very thoughtful gift.
That is nice.
And if you mention my name publicly, please use Mistral, not my real name.
So predictable.
Well, continuing the trend. I guess it's pretty easy to order tennis balls on Amazon. Thank you. Again.
This is the tension.
Well, some of these can't be. This is not tennis balls.
All right, so why don't we do this? Malcolm, explain the image behind us as Dave is going through unboxing it.
And he can note anything interesting.
And then we can go through.
All right, so yeah.
Keychain.
All right. So behind us is Stari Most. It's a so-called old bridge in the Bosnian city of Mostar. And it was built in 1566. On this date in history, it was constructed. What's so funny?
I don't know why.
Just more tennis balls.
Just more tennis balls.
Yeah,
can have the camera.
Hang on.
Yeah. Let us know when you get something that's not tennis balls.
And
continue here.
The "Hi Dave, tennis is best when not drippy. Enjoy your gift," from EvilKitty51. That's thoughtful. And so, okay, where are we? We're in Mostar. So it's 1566, and that's when it was built. And then in the Bosnian War in the early 1990s, I guess 1993, in the Bosniak-Croat War, it was bombed by the Croats and destroyed. And so it's this 400-something-year-old bridge. It's the oldest suspension arch bridge in all of Europe, I think, or the world.
While Malcolm's talking.
Yeah, and we're also looking at the bridge, Dave. And this is bizarre, this whole thing. So anyway, it was dates from the Ottoman Empire. It stood for 427 years, and then it was rebuilt in 2004. And it is considered an exemplary piece of Balkan Islamic architecture. And the arch of the bridge is made of local stone known as Tenelija. It spans the Neretva River in Mostar. And the guy who built it, he was charged with building this bridge, and he didn't think he was concerned that it was not going to work, his construction. So he had prepared his own suicide or his own funeral on the day the scaffolding was finally removed from the completed structure. But at the time, it was the widest man-made arch in the world. So that's it's been a point of pride for many hundreds of years. But then it was destroyed during the war, and newspapers based in Sarajevo, which is the capital of Bosnia, reported that more than 60 shells hit the bridge before it collapsed. The Croatian general responsible claimed in a book that he wrote, or a document that he wrote called How the Old Bridge Was Destroyed, there was an explosive charge or mine placed at the center of the bridge underneath, and it was detonated remotely by, presumably by the Bosnians, that the shelling isn't what did it. But most historians disagree and believe his research was trying to absolve his men and himself from crimes committed during the war. He was since accused of war crimes, and before he was convicted, he drank poison and killed himself. So the funeral for they didn't need to have the funeral for the guy who built it, but the guy who destroyed it did kill himself. Then later on, the Croats admitted they deliberately destroyed it, claiming it was of strategic importance, but that's really dubious. Also, it really was not of much. It was an attempt.
In this picture that we're looking at, that's the new.
That's the new one. We got a version. This is what it looks like today, and people dive off into the river, which
that's
is apparently
an amazing
very cold.
Picture. Like all those guys look exactly alike, and they choreograph their jumps so they don't fall on top of each other. Like
that's incredible.
Yeah.
Exactly alike, yes. Let me see the other images. So this is what it looked like before it was, this is what it was rebuilt. This is what it looks like rebuilt. And then what it looked like before. And this, it was built 427 years ago, and it was still standing. It was built, allegedly, something like the mortar was made with egg whites. And that's remarkable that they could build that and it would still be standing. And it took 60 mortar shells to bring it down, however many hundreds of years later. And then there's an image of what it looked like when it was being constructed, which is, here it is. But they built it using, this is what I thought was really interesting, they built it using the same technology and materials and Ottoman construction techniques. They got Tenelia stone from local quarries and used, get this, Hungarian army divers to recover stones from the original bridge from the river below. And then in 2004, the reconstructed bridge was inaugurated. And now it's a popular site for people who like to do the diving, this, you know, bridge diving and that sort of thing. So that's, I just, you know, whenever I read about these stories, there's always interesting backstories on it. And but one of the things that was emphasized in the article I read about it is that it wasn't of strategic value in the war. It was clearly an attempt at sort of a cultural destruction. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a piece of your culture that you're proud of, and we're going to destroy it. It is of no strategic value. It's only a walking bridge. It wasn't, you know, you couldn't roll tanks over it or anything. So, but you know, it's like a happy story. We have very few happy ending stories here on the Friday post game. So, except for Dave.
Wow. Well,
also another happy ending story. He gets all this good
happy,
stuff.
It's happy, yet somebody sent me the world's tiniest violin to cry for me.
That's awesome.
Hey, Dave.
You can't see it, Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Yes.
I gotta tell you something. You got a lot of balls.
Hey.
It's good, Bart.
Did they see it? Because that's pretty. The world's tiniest violin. That's clever. Do we know who sent that?
No.
So it looks like you got everything. You got are tennis balls. That's like 99% of the gifts. Then you got a chess set and a violin.
And a book.
And that's right.
Book. Sandy says, hi, Dave. I'm sorry you had to wait so long for someone to mail you something. Enjoy your gift. And let's see. Hi, Dave. Oh, that's the same one. And hi, Dave. Bart is right. We're not Rockefellers, but we do love you and the crew of the Friday Post game from Gabriel.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Violin musical instrument. I don't know if that was from Gabriel or someone else.
No, the musical instrument's from Jonathan Renteria. He quoted me. I understand. I'm not hurt.
Yeah, I'm not hurt. You are not receiving tennis balls from Jonathan Renteria. Jonathan, good job. I hope everybody doxes him now. No, we love you, Jonathan. I'm just kidding. All right, so thank you, and as always, stay strong. Stay strong. Emma Clure says stay strong. She knows where it's at. That's a gift to me. You're saying that, Emma. And that's all the notes. Oh, wait, no, here, one more. The few, the proud, the Friday Post Game crew from Seth. Thank you, Seth.
I have to say that I do feel a sense of community with this Friday Post Game crowd. Even though I don't always respond, I do almost always go to the
comments.
The comment section and read the comments.
I feel like
someone named J.K.M. Young or something like that wants me to play for him or her next time I do Weekly World News, but he or she wants me to get them all wrong like I usually do.
Right.
Which is hard to do, to get them all wrong.
Yeah. Even trying, there's... It's difficult. All right, the only other piece of business we have before we can get on to Weekly World News is that last time it was before the midterm elections, and Dave, Steve, and I all made our predictions about whether the Democrats would retake the House and what the numbers would be in the House and the Senate and some key Senate and gubernatorial races. And so I thought, what the heck, let's give away another T-shirt. Let's pick, and whoever got that right will also get a T-shirt, you know, person we're representing. So, and I get to join the fun, too.
Okay.
So Dave picks one. I pick one.
You just love picking out of a hat, huh?
No, what I love is cutting up 1,000 little pieces of paper and putting them in a hat. All right, so who are we playing for?
I'm playing Dave? For Mathman 71.
Mathman 71. I'm playing for John Lehman, and Steve is playing for Uhura. And that's a relatively recent addition to the
Uhura.
Uhura. And we're going to, Craig claims that he's going to take these and make them into a graphic and show them. And
why don't you put our name next
to it? Yeah, but they have to know
which
one goes.
Yeah, so this is Steve. Apologize for this little piece. This is me. I'm John Lehman, right? And you're Mathman.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the way I figured it was, whoever came the closest in guessing the breakdown of Republicans and Democrats in the House would get 10 points. Same deal in the Senate, and then 3 points each for guessing correctly on the Senate and gubernatorial races.
Okay.
And first we have the results of the U.S. House Dems versus Republicans. You are the only one who predicted that the Democrats would retake the House, so you get all 10 points, Steve, for that.
Our prediction was that pessimistic?
Yes, it was. It was very pessimistic.
Winning already, right out of the gate. That's.
And then the result of the Senate, Steve said that it was going to be 50-50. Oops. Dave said it was going to be 51-49 for the Republicans. I said it was going to be 54-46. I'm the closest. We're not sure yet, but I'm definitely the closest on that one. So I get those 10 points.
All right.
Sorry, Dave. And then the other races, we in the Senate, in the Cruz Beto race, all three of us picked Ted Cruz. We all got that right. Feinstein de Leon, we all picked Dianne Feinstein. Those were gimme points for the most part. But nevertheless, in the McCaskill-Hawley contest in Missouri, Dave and Steve picked Hawley. I picked McCaskill. I was dead wrong about that one. And in Arizona, Dave picked McSally. Steve and I picked Kristen Sinema. I think that one hasn't been called yet, but it's going to go to McSally most likely. So I gave that to Dave. In the Heller Rosen contest in Nevada, Steve picked Rosen, and Dave and I picked Heller, Dean Heller, and he lost. So Steve is the only one who gets those three points. Prognostic. I can't even say it. I'm making up a word and I can't say it. In Florida, all three of us said that Nelson was going to win, and we were all wrong. And in North Dakota, the Heitkamp-Kramer race, you picked Heidi Heitkamp, which was really going crazy. Dave and I both picked Kramer, and so we got that.
Are you sure?
And the great thing is, people, if they want to go back and check, we do have a recording of it.
Yeah.
And then the Donnelly Braun race in Indiana, we all picked Donnelly incorrectly. But, I mean, we were really, that was terrible.
Ooh, that's bad.
So that those points were doled out accordingly. And then the governor races, we all picked Gillum. I didn't award those points. Well, it doesn't matter because we all picked the same. But I didn't award them because that really is still up in the air. I did award those points. I didn't award the Georgia points, the Stacey Abrams race. So none of us got points for Gillum. And Stacey Abrams, we all picked Kemp, and that's still up in the air. So that nobody got any points, but it doesn't matter because we all picked the same one. Kobach Kelly race in Kansas. Dave and Steve picked Kemp. Picked Kelly. My annotation is here is terrible. I raced to get this done. Steve and I picked Kelly. Dave picked Kobach, and we were right about that one, which that was one of the biggest
wins of the night.
That was a tough one to pick and to get it right. We all thought that Cordray would win in Ohio, and he lost pretty badly. That was a bad pick by us. And then in Wisconsin, Dave thought Scott Walker would retake it. Steve and I both picked Evers. I called him Evans on the last show by mistake and was like, how dare you? So, you know, the gall of some people.
Let me tell you, the fans, I love you guys, but admit it. You love it when we make a mistake and correct us.
Yeah.
Just admit it.
Well, and they're right, too, because we have this whole team of producers working all week to prepare this show.
That's right.
And to make a mistake, it's inexcusable.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was all the races we picked. And the final tally.
I sure hope you tallied it up before.
I did. Where that
think,
tally
I think
is
I won.
The final tally.
Congratulations to Uhura.
It was. Steve won. Where is it? Steve won. It wasn't even really that close. Steve won 38. You were way behind because you lost those first three. Here it is. Okay. Steve wound up with 34 points. Dave with 21, and me with 28. So Uhura is the big winner. Gets a. You know what? I'm not even gonna say you get the right to solicit a T-shirt. I say Uhura gets a T-shirt.
Unless you live outside the United States and the post, the postage is too expensive, in which case,
good luck.
But yes, if you live in the United States, you get it.
If you live outside the United States, then it's back to...
I'm sorry, the continental United States.
And also, you have to send Dave some tennis balls. That's how we did. I don't. You guys want to have any thoughts about the midterms that you want to share? Because that's the big.
I do. I felt like if I were to give it a grade, a solid B, maybe even inching towards a B+. So the races that were really crushing were Gillum and Abrams. But I knew Abrams would lose not because she's not a good candidate, but because of the rampant cheating and voter suppression by Kemp. It's just amazing to me that we call ourselves a democracy and we have this insane race where one of the people in the race is the one that's administering the race and is in charge of tallying the votes. I mean, come on, that's crazy. And it's the same person who's engaged in all these insanely over-the-top voter suppression tactics. I mean, he's purged, 350,000 voters just last year, another 500,000 the year before. Just off the voter rolls. And we cover this a bit more on Aggressive Progressives with Greg Palast. But, you know, like this 96-year-old lady who's been voting in every election since the 60s couldn't vote this time. I mean, it's crazy. And yet the differential between the two candidates is tiny. So, you know, I was asking Malcolm before the show today, like how many votes, like, you know, does a Democrat have to win 52%, 55%? Yeah. Like, what do you need to win to actually win?
I would say in Stacey Abrams' case, it would be probably like 55%. It depends, you know, there's also the voter ID laws and other suppressionary tactics, you know.
Which is really hard to do because even in California, which is, you know, Gavin Newsom was supposed to run away with this election, right? Like, no one even gave it any consideration that his opponent, Cox or whatever his name is, even has a chance. And even in that race, that's supposed to be so lopsided, it was only 58-41.
Yeah, hyper-liberal California.
So it's hard to get 55%. It's hard to win 55-45. So if that's the bar for Democrats, they're going to lose a lot.
There were other tough races, too.
Yeah, so look, I'm really fired up about this issue of voter suppression because it's so, like, it's just so unacceptable. If someone did this, someone cheated like this in a game of Monopoly or chess, Dave, you'd be outraged and furious, right? You probably never want to play with that person ever again. And you would tell all your friends, this guy's a cheater, don't ever play. Like, why isn't the media all over this? You know, I mean,
because the Democrats don't make a stink about it. If the Democrats would make a stink about it, the media would have to respond.
No, it's so frustrating for me because the media covered the Russiagate like wall to wall with very little evidence of Russia's culpability and zero evidence on whether that impacted the outcome of the election, right? So, all right, fine. Let's say there should be I actually think there should be an investigation, right? But that's fine. But here we have clear evidence of massive irregularities, massive, with a clear impact on the outcome of the election. Why isn't this like a giant deal? Why isn't every major news outlet covering this and disenfranchising not just, I mean, obviously Stacey Abrams here, but all the people who voted for her? And in the story here is you have this white man stealing votes from a black woman who has an opportunity to become the first African-American governor in history. It's a huge story, and I just...
Woman governor,
right. It's just not, I don't know, I just feel like there's not enough momentum. Maybe voter suppression is so part of our culture, so part of our voting history that we don't care that much, whereas Russia, like this new novel thing is, you know, international cloak and dagger stuff that's very sexy and more, you know, ratings driven. But it's frustrating for me. Like, we should have investigators down there. We should have monitors. I mean, this is crazy. Like,
well, the question, but it's not illegal. Yeah. That's what I wonder. You know, people, we should take this to the Supreme Court. We should fight this. I'm like, I don't know if this is illegal.
Yeah, it was done by the Secretary of State.
You know, it may be perfectly. So, how do you fight this? And you know, even if you do take it to the courts, the Republicans have packed the courts, so they're going to. You know, all the way up to the Supreme Court, where Brett Kavanaugh gets to, you know,
I don't know.
Give the deciding vote.
I hear you, and I agree with you that the bigger problem is that it is not illegal.
Well, I mean, right? They're both. But problems.
We got to shed a massive. I mean, we got to put a spotlight on this.
Yes, but another part of the problem is the neutrality of the media, because when these voter ID laws, for example, are transparently racist, and they're transparently, and even the Republicans have even admitted that they do it to disenfranchise, you know, certain places in North Carolina, it's obvious, and Pennsylvania guy said, oh, well, this will help us, help our governor win, or you know, whatever. So they're not even really hiding it, but they, when asked about it, they say, "Oh, we just want to make sure every, you know, we don't reduce voter fraud and all that sort of thing." Which it's transparent BS, but because the media doesn't call out BS like that, they just, Republicans say they're just trying to root out voter fraud. Democrats say they're disenfranchising black people.
I hear you, and you're right on why this is happening. I'm just very, very frustrated that it's happening because people pretended to care so much about
I'm not saying that's why it's happening. I'm saying that's why the media doesn't make a stink about it.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. The media's culpability in all of this. I mean, the media pretended to care so much about the integrity of our elections. Oh my God, Russia's interfering. Yeah. They're meddling. You know, they're putting Facebook ads and misleading tweets. and that may very well be true. In fact, it is true. Okay, so what? I mean, here we have clear violations, in my opinion, with massive repercussions on the course of that state. All those people who live in that, we have 50 states, and one of them, at least one of them in this instance, is massively corrupt in how the elections are are done there. So, I mean, and this is not just a Georgia problem. This is a problem in many, many states. So I agree with all the people who are outraged by the Russia scandal. We need to have clean elections that we can trust, that we can be feel confident in. And the best way to do that, I think, is to clean up voter suppression issues and make sure that every vote counts.
Another way it could get attention, and this is half facetious, but it would work, is if a Democratic governor or a couple of them did the same thing.
Well, it's a little harder to, I mean, how would you do it, though, to suppress the elderly vote or the white vote, or I mean, because that
you find that they'll they have to find a way.
They'd have to hire Republicans who did it, because they'd be the experts.
Right.
But I think the same is true with the problems with voting machines, that are hackable, and the all the problems that Jennifer Cohn, who writes for TYT Investigates, has written about this, and she's been tireless. All the problems with voting machines and the potential hacking and potential of monkeying with them, not monkeying them up. But and the silence from Democrats is frustrating, but the silence from Republicans, I think, is telling, because they know if anybody's going to be messing with the election machines or with the voting machines, it's them. So they don't want to. If they were concerned that Democrats were going to do it, then they would be up in arms about it. But the Democrats aren't going to.
They only make a stink when it goes against you.
Right. Yeah. Same like with the Electoral College. If it had gone the other way instead of the way it went for Donald Trump, then they would have been.
Same thing like when we were gambling in Tunica, Mississippi. It's a new casino. The workers there don't quite know what they're doing yet. So you're playing blackjack. And when they're adding up the numbers and they screw it up and they get it wrong in your favor, you don't say anything. Oh, okay.
Did that happen?
It happened repeatedly. But if they screw up in their favor, like, whoa. I have a 17 and you have a 16. You got to take another hit. Oh, you busted. Sorry, I win, right? So, yeah.
That's a good gig.
If you're a gambler, go gamble at a brand new casino with new employees who don't know what they're doing.
They can't count to 21. Hang on, I have to take off my shoes to count all this way up. All right, so that's Dave. You got any thoughts on the midterms you want to share? I just have one question, and I'll put this out to the audience. If you're on Twitter, I got a lot of tweets, like encouragement to vote tweets from a lot of celebrities, and I wonder if that has any real impact on people. Like, it actually gets people out to vote and vote Democratic, because obviously they really want you to. But it's not Ted Nugent tweeting about how everybody needs to get out and vote and your vote counts and so on and so forth. Or if it has the opposite effect, because the people who hate Hollywood celebrities and don't like Hollywood celebrities telling us what to do are more inclined to go out and vote just to vote against them.
No one's going out of their way to vote when they weren't going to just to vote against the celebrities. So I think it's probably neutral. I don't know.
The negligible effect?
It's negligible, slight positive effect. I think the best thing about those kind of messages is that it is normal to vote, right? You normalize that behavior. Everyone's doing it. You're the weird one for not voting, right? Like, that's the message. But I doubt that people are going to put things, I mean, but you're going to only vote if it's convenient, right? You're not going to put aside other things to go vote. And, for some people who are getting paid on an hourly basis and they don't get paid if they're taking time off to vote, they're probably not going to do it.
Yeah, I would just want to comment, not on the election, but my experience. That night I was home, not here at the office, and I was interested in the election, but I was really into the results. I didn't have the energy to listen to people talk, so I had CNN on mostly. And they have those great maps. They have great data.
Wait, CNN didn't have people talking?
They did, but not early in the night.
Oh, okay.
Dave, tell our members why CNN is better than TYT. Tom.
Well, wait till they get to the finish line. So CNN has great data. And I love when they go to the map. It's really a good tool, which we can't really compete with. But then I got a little tired of data, and it was stalling. There weren't that many results. So CNN's commentary is terrible. So I flipped on TYT and got hooked immediately. It was engaging. It was interesting. It had a direction.
On CNN, they have to be neutral, or they have a Republican and a Democrat, and you know what they're going to say already.
You know what they're going to say already. Well, it was great.
Yeah, even if they're not necessarily neutral, like they're not really allowed to get super animated. Whereas people here, they're like emotionally invested.
Sure.
You would much rather see someone who is impassioned and is really, just really care about these people, because the fact of the matter is, a lot of people at TYT personally know some of those candidates who are running, and we're rooting for them, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was heartbreaking in the primaries for me when Brent Walter lost. Like, it was painful. And then, you know, is it Charisse Davids?
Yeah.
She won. Winning. She won winning. I was thinking, that could have been Brent, right? So I agree, like, TYT commentary, because it is so, in many ways, personal and impassioned. It's way better than kind of a neutral, bland discussion on mainstream media.
And you do get your information. TYT said some interesting factual things that they found on the computer, on the internet, that CNN didn't share. So it's not just commentary. You get enough data and information from TYT.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah.
Rotating people in and out of the panels. And Cenk is a monster. He was there. He was here like 15 hours. That guy can talk.
Yeah, I mean, he even imposed himself on aggressive regressives for a half an hour.
Oh, really?
Totally unnecessarily.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh, I got to get in on the coverage the minute it starts.
Now, the greatest punishment for Cenk is to not let him talk.
Sure.
It drives him crazy, yeah.
How do you impose that?
No, we played a game back in college. I forget what the game was. But the winner can create a rule that applies to everyone else in the group. And this girl that we're playing with, she said, Jen cannot speak for 2 minutes or something like that. Like nothing. He can't chime in on his opinions on fried chicken or whether the movie was good or bad. Like nothing during the course of the game. There's all this chit-chat going on and Jen couldn't say anything. It drove him nuts. It was like the worst punishment he's ever endured for those 2 minutes.
Yeah. It's like in hockey going to the whatever it's called.
Penalty box?
Yeah, I would like to see that video. Much like, and I would watch it like all of our haters watch the 2016 election night video, TYT melts down or whatever video.
But the real punishment was on us, because when the 2 minutes expired, he wouldn't shut up.
Yeah, I'm sure he made up for lost time, yeah. All right, so but while we still have time, I want to get to Weekly World News. I believe we have an opening for this. Weekly World News. This is a game where you guys can play along at home. Craig plays along over there, our stage manager. And it's a relatively straightforward game. I call stories from around the globe, international stories that most likely were not covered on the main show or in the American media in general. And then I turn into a little quiz, a little multiple choice quiz for Dave and Steve, and they have to guess what the real story is as opposed to the fake stories that I have made up. And they each play, much like we did earlier in the show, they play for a different member, and that member wins the opportunity to try and get a t-shirt out of us. Good luck. And if you have commented on a Friday Post game in the past, your name is in here, unless you already won, in which case your name or played, your name has been pulled out if you've won. I don't know, if you lost, I think I put your name back in. But so that's how you get your name in here if you're concerned it isn't. So Dave, who are you gonna be playing for today, Dave?
I'm going to be playing for Tom and Melody.
Tom and Melody, so that's two people. They get to share the t-shirt. And Steve's playing for?
Melissa Elisa? I don't know.
Melissa Elisa, yeah, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Craig is gonna take these and turn them into a graphic somehow. You know, I'll make sure we know
Craig,
who's for who.
Craig, you can come into the screen, it's okay. Come on in. Let the members see who you are.
Just hearing this disembodied laugh, like it's a, like there's a Twilight Zone episode where you know these people they wake up after get drunk and a party and they don't know what's going on. All they hear is this disembodied little girl's laughter, and they're trying to figure out what it is. And spoiler alert, they went to the Twilight Zone. So our first question, Dave and Steve have their boards ready with the potential answers, and it comes to us from Yemen. There's Yemen. Nothing good, no good stories coming out of Yemen these days. And the question is as follows. Saudi Arabia and its allies have recently intensified attacks on Yemen's main port city of Hodeidah in response to what? Is it A, the scheduling of upcoming peace talks, which have spurred the Saudi effort to quickly seize as much territory as possible? B, Saudi concerns over Houthi military gains in west central Yemen? C, defection from a key Houthi-allied faction weakening Hodeidah's defenses, or D, intelligence reports suggesting that the city is filled with Washington Post reporters looking to get married. You think that's a poor taste?
It's poor taste.
Poor taste? Probably. So is it because the Saudis are trying to seize as much territory as they can before peace talks? They're worried about Houthi military gains?
We know the answer.
Okay, so we have our answers. We have the answer of A from Steve and A from Dave. What is the correct answer?
And A from Craig.
And A from Craig also. The correct answer is A, the scheduling of upcoming peace talks, which have spurred the Saudi effort to quickly seize as much territory as possible. So, yeah, I think this week it might be a little easier than other weeks, maybe. That wasn't that hard. But if you're unfamiliar with the show, we talk about the story a little bit, and then we move on to the next one. So, yeah, so there's increased violence in Hodeidah, which is on the very west coast of Yemen, and it's the main port that basically like 90% of goods come through to get to the Yemeni population, and it's been the Saudis have cut off the port essentially for 3 years now, so that is leading to the humanitarian crisis that we have in Yemen. And so this is the worst violence in Hodeidah in the whole of the 3 year war. There people are trapped in their homes, there's shrapnel and gunfire, and you know it's risky to leave the house. And let's go to the story about there's been 100 civilian airstrikes. Pro-government militias are trying to seize as much ground as possible before fighting is supposed to stop at the end of November, when it is hoped UN-sponsored peace talks will restart in Sweden. Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates coalition-backed troops are inching closer to the city's Houthi rebel-held center from their current stalemate positions in the southern suburbs and at the airport in a three-pronged attack. On Wednesday, an Emirati-trained group known as the Giants, with the help of Apache attack helicopters, secured a key road leading to Hodeidah's port. And the Houthis are also, they're fighting back. They're burning tires to obscure gunships' views of the city. They are laying an estimated hundreds of thousands of landmines, and that's always good news for generations to come. The coalition attack is codenamed Operation Golden Victory. These things, you know, now there are snipers. The Yemeni snipers have been taking up positions on the top of the city's May 22nd hospital, which was named for Yemen's National Day, you know, Independence Day, and other buildings, apparently. So the blockade has been going on for 3 years. It contributes greatly to the famine that's going on, and the famine threatens to engulf half of Yemen's 28 million population. And even people in Hodeidah can't flee because the Houthis have roadblocks leading out of the city, so people can't get out of the city. But it's looking like if these peace talks take place, it's going to be even uglier, the fighting, possibly fighting, you know, street to street, block to block, house to house, which is, you know, horrific. Urban warfare has not come to this city anyway in this war yet. So let's go back to the story. The talks have been given a new lease of life in the aftermath of the killing of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi after he visited the Saudi Arabian consulate in Istanbul, which has led to almost universal opprobrium and a diplomatic crisis for Riyadh. Riyadh's allies in Washington have also signaled that hostilities in Yemen must be brought to a close, a marked change in tone from a few months ago when the Trump administration all but gave the green light for an offensive on Hodeidah. So I didn't know that. I didn't know that the Trump administration was pressuring the Saudis to wrap it up. Even though, hey!
There we go.
There's the other tradition we all love about the Friday post game. Dave's phone going off.
Steve's phone sometimes goes off.
My phone never goes off,
you know,
ever.
He's always too busy playing Words with Friends.
Scrabble.
Scrabble, sorry.
But my phone is always on silent mode, always. It's never, a ringer is never on, ever.
Okay.
it's tradition. So I would be disappointed if it didn't. So, and sometimes it's Cenk, like Cenk will call you, and you have a little chat with Cenk on the Friday post game. That's always fun. All right, so the Houthis rejected a proposal earlier to put the city, the whole port, under some sort of UN authority because that would be them ceding control of the port, even though they're under serious attack. These peace talks hopefully are going to happen later this month or in December, and that would be a good thing. But it's one of those deals where, in the interim, it's bad news because both sides are going to try to fight as, you know, it could be very, the next month could be unbelievably.
The Saudis are such great allies, aren't they?
They're the worst people. You know, the UAE, they get off relatively easy. The United Arab Emirates are every bit as horrible as the Saudis, but it's mostly the Saudis who get the attention. But I think the UAE, they're
smaller and less impactful than the Saudis.
Right, that's but they're taking a lead on a lot of this stuff,
right,
and committing horrific human rights abuses. And like the whole thing is horrible for the Yemeni people, but what the UAE, they're setting up prisons and starving people. I mean, they're really, I mean, they're all horrible. It's, you know, this isn't a competition. But they get less press about it, and they're every bit as responsible, as are we. So, you know, I don't want to pretend otherwise. So that's our first fun story out of Yemen. Next, because we're going to stick with upbeat topics and locales, we go to Gaza. And Gaza is where? So that's the map of Israel, and that's the Gaza Strip there. And we're going to be talking about the northern border between Gaza and Israel, where the March of Return protests have been going on at that border. So here's the question. What recently happened to 22-year-old Ad Abu Amro, the Palestinian whose Gaza border protest photo went viral? And that's, we have the image of the photo here. Maybe you saw it, that he's holding the Palestinian flag shirtless, and he's using a slingshot to hurl rocks. And so the answer, the possible answers are, he was nominated for, this is what happened to him. He was nominated for a Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award. B, he was shot by the Israelis. C, he became the father of triplets. Or D, he used his slingshot skills to be crowned the winner on this season of Gaza's Got Talent.
That's not a bad idea for a show.
Oh, jeez. Well, we have a network. We know people, you know, we have connections in Gaza. So he got the Human Rights Award, he was shot by the Israelis, became the father of triplets, or the D answer, which even our less astute viewers, new viewers, probably have realized it is never the D answer. Okay, the possible answers we have are B from Dave, Steve, and C from Dave. What is the correct answer, please? B, he was shot by the Israelis.
Answer that. Made most sense.
Yeah, you were going out on a limb with C, Dave. It's true. Well, I gotta keep score here. Steve, 2-for-2.
Yeah.
Dave, 1-for-2. Okay, so what's the story with this? These protesters, these people are so brave, and their lives are so awful.
So just real quick, because I like to share my insights on how I came up with the answer.
Yeah.
The reason why I chose B was that was the only sad, depressing choice. And you said, to continue with a theme of sadness and depression, we're going to go to Gaza. And it wasn't going to be a happy story. It's going to be a bad story. So I was like, it's got to be B.
Well, I didn't mean it that way. I just meant that, you know, Yemen's terrible, Gaza's terrible. But
what you don't mean tells more about what you have in, what the intention is.
Maybe. I should keep quiet from now on. But listen, you used to guess based on what the letter had been before, and I they're completely random, so that's not a good way to do it.
Forcing you to up your game, yeah. That's what it is.
Well, I'm going to say the reason I didn't guess B, which was the obvious guess, is I figured I would have heard about that.
Well, So this photo has become iconic. And
it's a pretty awesome photo.
It's an awesome photo, there's no question. Let's go to the story. With a Palestinian flag in one hand and a slingshot poised in the other, the photo of 22-year-old Ad Abu Amro has drawn comparisons with the iconic French Revolution painting Liberty Leading the People. On Monday, Abu Amro was taking part in protests at the northern Gaza border against Israel's 11-year-old land, air, and sea blockade when Israeli troops intervened. I like that how they put that, when the Israeli troops intervened. Anyway, Abu Amro was wounded in the leg by live bullets. So he's not killed. He's going to be okay. But I like that they intervene. Like when my kids are fighting, I often will intervene.
With a gun.
I shoot one of them in the leg. That's intervening, right? That's what an intervention is. They intervened. So apparently he says that he protests every Friday and Monday with friends. Like that's their thing. They just every Friday and Monday they go out and hurl rocks at the Israeli, you know, positions. And the Israelis are in no danger. They're fortified and they're not at risk at all. And here's what he said, if we go back to the story. If I get killed, I want to be wrapped in the same flag. We are demanding our right of return and protesting for our dignity and the dignity of our future generation, Abu Amro told Al Jazeera late last month. So if you don't know the background of what's going on in Gaza, for 7 months, these protests have been going on along the border where the fence with Israel is, demanding the right to return to the homes and land their families were expelled from 70 years ago. And they also want Israel to end the crippling blockade of the Gaza Strip, which has gutted the coastal enclave's economy and deprived its 2 million inhabitants of many basic commodities. Gaza is often described as an open-air prison. I prefer to call it an open-air concentration camp because people who are supporters of Israel really don't like that when you call it that. And B, because in a prison, you are obligated to feed and clothe and, you know, and on some level take care of the people who are in prison. In a concentration camp, you are not so obligated, and Israel does not feel that obligation. And but more than 200 Palestinians have been killed and thousands more wounded by Israeli troops deployed along the other side of the fence in the 7 months. I think that's just horrific, and it's such a stain, and it's so shameful. And I applaud people like Abu Amro, I guess is how he goes, and that their courage and their commitment, much like the valve turners we talked to, people who put their lives on the line and that risk going to jail for a long time because of the environmental crisis we face. And so my hat's off to him, and people who think that he and his fellow protesters deserve to be shot when they are armed with only stones or nothing at all. Well, you gotta do your own moral reckoning on that, I guess.
You know, 30 years ago, Cenk and I were high school seniors in New Jersey, and we used to have these debates in our civics class about the whole Palestinian-Israeli crisis. At the time, it was the Intifada.
Yeah.
And my God, 30 years later, it's worse than ever.
Yeah.
I foolishly thought that we would make progress, and we really haven't.
No, it's the Israelis. I mean, the right-wing Israeli government and a significant portion of the Israeli population, just they're like, we're going to wait you out, and we're going to slowly drive you off and take over this land and cleanse you ethnically from this land. I don't think they really want Gaza. They don't mind if people stay in Gaza as long as they don't come into Israel. But it's horrific. And the United States if we really wanted to, we could put an end to it, and we don't. So. We are absolutely culpable. All right, next we're going to South America. So this is Dave's territory. He might know this story because he's our South American expert. And it's Peru. Peru in South America there. And the story is as follows. The question is as follows. Peru's former chief of national police, Raul Becerra, was arrested Tuesday on charges of what? Was it A, election tampering, B, baby trafficking, C, exotic wildlife smuggling, or D, performing the forbidden dance, the lumbada? Craig probably doesn't even know what that is. Never heard of it. Yeah, remember the lumbada?
The lumbada.
It was a forbidden dance that no one was doing. People were, it's forbidden.
The way I recall the lumbada was, during parties in college. Basically, you just go up against some other person and just like rub your bodies together.
Yeah, you grind, you put just your leg
grind,
between them.
And yeah.
So well, maybe you're not going to win any competitions doing that. All right, so what are our answers? We have an answer of C from Dave and B from Steve. That's the same as last time. What's the correct answer, please? It is B, Steve. Oh my gosh, what is happening?
It's a blue wave. It's a
it's an O wave.
Yeah, it's O.
All right, yeah, so you went with the worst possible answer again.
Yes, I'm going
with it. I didn't say it was another bad story, but you went with it. And,
my strategy is go with the worst possible answer.
Yeah, so he's been arrested as allegedly part of a baby trafficking ring, along with his partner, Cynthia Tejo. More than a dozen people, including doctors, who allegedly took babies from poor women in order to sell them. A pediatrician and a gynecologist were also arrested. This mega raid of 18 homes and businesses, and they rescued a 5-month-old baby. The partner, Cynthia Tejo, is suspected of leading the trafficking ring. And we have go to the story here. The gang included hospital workers who would identify mothers they could potentially exploit, according to the prosecutor's investigation. Among those arrested are two women who, it is alleged, secretly touted for backroom abortionists outside a hospital. They persuaded women considering abortion to accept money in exchange for their newborn babies, prosecutors said. Abortion is illegal in Peru unless the mother's health is at risk. Apparently, the going rate for a baby in Peru is $1,187, equivalent to 4,000 Peruvian soles. And this is the gut punch of this story. Prosecutors are investigating whether the babies were offered for illegal adoption by foreigners or possibly for organ trafficking. So that's
so horrible.
This guy has not been proven guilty. Who knows? Maybe he is an innocent bystander, had nothing to do with it at all. But another person who has some real moral reckoning. There he is, Raul Becerra. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Dave? Becerra.
Got it right.
So if that's true, did you know? Have you heard about this story? No, obviously.
No.
And you don't know him, obviously, either. So, yeah. Okay. We're running short on time, so let's go to the next question. Where comes to us from where? Iran. And the question is as follows: Iranian officials mocked the recently announced U.S. sanctions for applying to which of the following? Was it A, A chain of government-subsidized retail stores that closed in October 2011. B, an oil tanker that sank off the coast of China. C, exports of pork products. Or D, performances by 80s one-hit wonder A Flock of Seagulls.
That's random.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
Who can figure out why that's not random? Flock of Seagulls. I'll let you figure out the answer first.
Yeah, I got other things on my mind.
Craig, how'd you do on the other two, Craig?
2-1.
You're 2-1. Okay, so Steve's beating you. All right, do we have our answers? Is it the government-run or subsidized retail stores? Okay, we have an answer of A from Dave and C from Steve. And the correct answer is B, an oil tanker that sank off the coast of China. Craig got it. So go back to the answer, the possible answers. Do we understand why C is not, it would be funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because it's a Muslim country exporting pork products. That's not true. And do we know why A Flock of Seagulls is what that's a reference to?
I don't know.
No.
Oh, the song I ran.
Come on, Steve, you got beat by Dave in that. Flock of Seagulls. You should be disappointed in yourself.
I am disappointed.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
We're both very disappointed in you. All right, so here's the deal. So the United States has pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, and we have imposed sanctions. And these are sanctions imposed by the Trump administration, and allegedly the largest ever U.S. sanctions list, according to the Trump administration. It includes, but the Iranian officials were making fun of the Trump administration because they included things like a mothballed Boeing 740 or a fleet of mothballed Boeing 747s, a bank that closed years earlier, and a sunken oil tanker that exploded off of China months ago. I believe we have an image of that that tank. Yeah, so this is it's called the I've forgotten its name, but Trump pulled out of the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran. And even though UN monitors say Iran is still abiding by the deal, which is they agreed to limit their uranium enrichment program in return for the lifting of international sanctions, the Trump administration capriciously restored those sanctions, or at least some of them. And going to the story, the U.S. Treasury Department imposed penalties on more than 700 Iranian and Iranian-linked individuals, entities, aircraft, and vessels in the new sanctions. Among those are 50 Iranian banks and subsidiaries and more than 200 people and ships. However, scattered among the list are surprising entries like the crude oil tanker Sanchi. That vessel collided with a bulk freighter and caught fire off China's east coast in January, killing all 32 sailors aboard, which is a pretty horrific story. But it's also another entry was the Tat Bank in Iran, which closed in 2012. The foreign minister, who was a gentleman named Javad Zarif, took to Twitter and mocked some of the targets, describing it as a desperate psychological ploy. Going back to the story, Ishak Jahangiri, President Hassan Rouhani's senior vice president, also criticized the sanctions. Americans think their list is more effective if it is longer, Jahangiri said, according to the state-run IRNA news agency. He said he had discussed the list with other officials, with many saying it was, quote, less than what we expected, which reminded me of Trump during the presidential campaign talking about his penis size. You know, Marco Rubio saying, you know, he hasn't got much going on down there, and mm-hmm. Trump saying, oh, I could see Trump saying, oh, these are very big. They're very big sanctions. But Iran is suffering from a massive economic crisis right now, and these are not going to help. The United States is encouraging, strongly encouraging allies to restrict the oil that they buy from Iran and trying to reduce it to zero. But the Russians don't like it. The Russians are upset about this, and they think the sanctions are not legitimate, according to Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, and that Russia's first reaction to Washington's new list of sanctions against Iran was that the U.S. has a policy of issuing an ultimatum and making unilateral moves that are unacceptable these days. So I think that the suggestion from the Russian ambassador or foreign minister is that the United States thinks it can act unilaterally in ways that we used to be able to, but now our influence is waning, and that's what he's getting at. This is one way where they'll be testing that, but I feel like the sanctions are foolish. There's the Iran is not a state sponsor of terror to any degree compared to the United States. Have you guys seen like those tweets going on about how Iran, you know, is such a danger to the United States, and then they'll show a map of Iran with all the U.S. military bases all surrounding in every surrounding country of Iran? Well, it's understandable why we would feel threatened by them, because we are surrounded by Iranian military bases, of course, also.
Yeah, it's comical how much we demonize Iran, and we absolutely
never, ever criticize Saudi Arabia, right? Like, ever. It's incredible.
I mean, Saudi Arabia, Israel goes and kills nuclear scientists in Iran. All right, we got to finish up soon. So let's go to the last question, which comes to us from our beloved Canada to the north, eh? And the question is as follows. We're 3-1, so Steve has already won, but Craig could catch Steve. So let's see. After his team scored a touchdown in a recent game, CFL player John Gott celebrated by doing what? Was it A, jumping into the stands and in the process tearing his Achilles tendon, B, humping the goalpost for 12 seconds straight, C, chugging a beer, or D, performing the forbidden dance, the lumbata?
This time,
okay,
man,
this time it has to be D. D can't be fake twice.
What's it going to be, Craig? How are you doing at home? Can you beat Steve? And who are you playing for? Do we remember the name of the person you're playing for? All right, we have an answer of C from Steve, C from Dave, and A from Craig. What is the correct answer? It is C, chugging a beer. So, Dave, 4-1. Now, this we have a video of this. I didn't tell you that we had a video. You guys have the video? Can we see the video of this? Because it's kind of entertaining.
John got a beer. Make short work of it too.
Oh, that might be legend status right there.
That's pretty good.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
It is awesome. Yeah. That's why I wanted to include it. It's so awesome.
Yeah, the reason why I picked C is that is the worst answer in terms of the worst thing you can do as a celebration. Jumping to the stands, that's totally fine. Tearing the Achilles is a bad impact, but the decision to jump to the stands is totally fine. Humping the goalposts, weird, but that's fine too. But chugging a beer is crazy. You can't do that.
I think you're getting more trouble.
After a workout, have some beers.
I think you would get in more trouble for humping the goalpost for 12 seconds. 12 seconds is a long time to hump goalposts.
Maybe not for you. Maybe for you.
Well, it depends. You know, were they asking for? Were they showing a little leg? Yeah. What were they wearing? Okay. So we have to go, Craig. We have to go.
We should probably wrap it up.
We should probably wrap it up. Okay. That's the last I want to hear from Bernie. From you, Bernie.
Wrap it up.
Two things quickly. One, there's a story I didn't include, but I wanted to show you, Dave, that you might want to look into. You might want to travel to Bolivia for this, because if we can bring up this graphic or this story, because I thought you... Bolivia to host World Camel Congress. I don't know what that means. I can share the story with you.
Animals are people.
Those weren't... Oh. Okay, so Melissa Elisa...
Look at the graphics work.
Nice work. Thank you
That's
very
awesome.
Much. She's a big fan of Steve. Now, she gets the privilege of asking for soliciting a T-shirt. All right, I don't care. I know we're out of time, but I'm going to do it. We need one totally true or totally bullshit. So bring up the bumper. Let's see it, and then we're going to quickly go through it, and then we'll get out of here. We'll skip the question, but we got to have that. You're just, Dave, your bitterness over Anna being more popular and you not being on our bumper. All right, so it's a very quick question. It's very easy, and it is as follows. Bring up the first one, please. Donald Trump will shut down the Mueller investigation by December 1st. Totally true or totally bullshit? I ask you, Dave, because you were so obnoxious about it. Totally true or totally bullshit? We don't do nuance. Simple answer.
Totally bullshit. He won't do it, and he won't do it that quickly. And Mueller might finish the investigation before
true,
that.
True, in that case, it would be a totally bullshit. Totally true or totally bullshit?
Totally bullshit.
You say he's not going to because he's not going to, or because it's going to wrap up before then? Or
no, he's not going to because it's going to be too difficult to kill it by then.
I'm going to say totally true. I think he is going to get desperate, and he's already unhinged with this Jim Acosta stuff, and you know it seems like we're at risk of Donald Trump
by his own
standards becoming even more unhinged. And I think so that I'm going to say totally true. You guys in the comments, let us know what you think. Totally true or totally BS. And also anything else you want to share with us. We do read the comments and then sometimes we put them into a little segment so your comment could get read on air. Definitely, you know, you're in our good graces if you sent Dave some
yeah, swag. Thank you so much for all the gifts.
And I, by the way, I'm a super huge fan. You love tennis and chess. I love Fabergé eggs. fine crystal, Waterford crystal.
Yes, I enjoy fine cured meats from Spain.
So just, you know, whatever, Fabergé. Yeah. You want to send me Fabergé? Go ahead. I'm not going to stop you.
Big chunks of diamonds are also good.
Listen, we appreciate you watching. Thanks for watching. Have a great weekend. And as always,
stay strong.